And I think you might be muted for the Zoom.
Start again. Hello. Sorry, guys. I'm not going to reintroduce too much, but yes, welcome. This is an event of the Green Team. The Green Team does meet every Thursday of the month. Every third Thursday of the month, and it's just a volunteer group of staff, faculty, students interested in promoting sustainability on our campus. But I got in touch with Kaya. I think it was through work with the Office for Sustainability over the summer. She's been really active, even though she's not an alumni, and so it was really great to connect. And we both felt like this is information that's going to be really useful for our whole community. So I hope we all learned something today. And without further ado, I'll just let you take it away from here, Kaya. But thank you so much for joining us. And I'm going to mute me again. Or actually, I'll leave the room unmuted. What's best for you? I'll leave it muted for now for
Yeah,
your
I need to be
presentation.
free.
Yeah, and then at the end we'll get to Q&A, and then I'll unmute us at that point. Okay, thank you.
Sounds perfect. Will you all just let me know if you can see my screen? Yep. Okay. Great. So thank you all for giving me this time. I'm really excited to chat with you about Earth Warriors. And I was going to say, if at any point you have a question, please feel free to stop me. It's not meant to be me talking at you for the next little bit. So please feel free to put them in the chat if you're online, or just unmute and ask me if you're in person. I'm very jealous that you're all together in Gutman. So today I want to chat with you a bit about teaching climate change to young students without causing anxiety. I thought first I would introduce myself. So my name is Kaya Lamba, and I actually started my career as a kindergarten teacher in Oakland, California with Teach for America. And on the left is a photo of me in my first year teaching. And on the right is actually 2 weeks ago when we went to visit some of the schools that are implementing Earth Warriors in Botswana and Zambia. So I am always happiest in an early childhood education classroom. I'm so passionate about working with young students. And my co-founder, Shweta, is actually really passionate about sustainability. So Earth Warriors is a bit of a marriage of both of our passions, teaching climate change and sustainability to young students. So that's just a quick introduction to myself. And actually, interestingly, when I was putting together this talk, I realized that Harvard has been a really big part of the Earth Warriors journey in multiple different ways. So I am obviously an alumna of the Ed School. I did the IEP program, which now no longer exists, with Professor Reimers, and graduated virtually in 2020. And actually, the thing that kickstarted Shweta and I to quit our full-time jobs and start Earth Warriors full-time was we actually got our first grant for Earth Warriors from the Harvard Mithil Institute. So that kind of spearheaded us to take this on. And just this year, we actually became a part of the Harvard Climate Entrepreneurs Circle, which is run by the Harvard Alumni for Climate and the Environment. So I thought it was really interesting that actually when we started in 2020, but at each point, Harvard has been on our journey. So just to talk you through what I'm going to go through today, we'll start with kind of why climate education, the importance of it, which I'm sure you all have some idea of because you came today. A quick overview of Earth Warriors, then to dive into our approach, which we think can be applicable to anyone who's trying to teach climate education, whether you are using the Earth Warriors curriculum or not. And then I would love for all of you to get involved if you're interested, so we can chat about that really quickly at the end. So just to start, as we all know, climate change is a huge issue for our planet, and children will be the most affected. So physically, of course, children born today are going to face many more extreme weather events. I think we've all seen that wherever we are, from sort of heat waves to flooding to drought and so on. And you can see some of the statistics here. But in addition to the physical threat, it's actually taking a huge mental health toll on students and adults. But they're increasingly anxious about climate change, and recent surveys in multiple countries and multiple age groups show that they're more concerned about climate change than anything else. And yet, actually, nothing is being done to prepare and educate these young students for the future they will face. And this is despite the fact that research shows that if just 16% of students received climate education, it would actually lead to a future reduction of 19 gigatons of CO2. And to put that in perspective, that's actually half of the world's carbon emissions in 2019. So climate education can be a really powerful tool to combat climate change, and yet it's really underutilized right now. In fact, Italy is the only country that's put climate change learning standards in their national learning standards. And New Jersey as a state has as well, and California is making moves. But in general, most countries don't have explicit climate change learning standards at all age groups in their national learning standards. And, you know, we start with really young children, partly because of my background from all the way as young as 3 years old. And I wanted to take a moment to talk about why early childhood, right? Because when we started Earth Warriors, we got a bit of pushback saying, isn't this a really scary topic for really young kids? And we will get into that in detail later in the presentation. But really, there are so many reasons. You know, you need to build a strong foundation for the youngest students. Kids are smart. Three-year-olds, even four-year-olds, know what's going on, and they need to be prepared from a really young age, but in a very age-appropriate way. So we're not starting with kind of really complicated science or systems level change with our youngest students. We build them up to that as they go through the program. We also really need to prepare them to be resilient, because their early years is when they're navigating their way through the world. They're trying to understand their environment, and giving teachers guidance to introduce this in a very soft and age-appropriate way is really important. We, of course, want them to build this bond with nature. So putting a positive association with nature and all of these activities from a young age is really important. And then, as we say, you know, the learning builds on itself week after week, year after year. So embedding these basic concepts and really that emotional connection from a young age goes a long way to then students having these lifelong habits, and living a sustainable life will come as naturally to them as brushing our teeth does to us. And I really love this quote, which we use a lot, is we do not inherit the earth from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children. But in addition to the student and children side of things, which is, of course, really important, a lot of teachers really want to teach climate education. These statistics are from a global UNESCO survey that was done last year that show the overwhelming majority of teachers really do want to teach climate education, but they face some serious barriers in doing so. One is a lack of confidence. None of us learned about this growing up. We all as adults are trying to teach ourselves about climate change and sustainability. So there's a lack of confidence. Two, there's a lack of resources. So not a lot exists out there in terms of a comprehensive curriculum for climate change for this young age. And then three is a lack of time and capacity. I know as a former teacher, the hours you put into planning your lessons, working with students, meeting with their families, to then have to implement something new on top of that or go out and research yourself takes a lot of time that teachers just don't have. So this is where Earth Warriors comes in. And actually for this part, I might want you to unmute or if you're online, put your answers in the chat. But my first question is, how do you feel when you see this photo? This is a typical photo associated with climate change, a starving polar bear and her cub. How does this make you feel? There's no wrong answers. You can just shout them out.
Despair.
Despair. And someone said in the chat, sad, completely agree.
Grief.
Grief. Absolutely. So kind of feelings of hopelessness, despair, as you've all said, versus how do you feel when you see this photo? This is Billy, one of our Earth Warrior students. He's 5 years old, and he, in fact, loved our badge so much, he asked the teacher to print it out so he could go home and stick it on his t-shirt. So curious, how do you feel when you see Billy?
Hopeful.
Hopeful.
Encouraged.
Encouraged.
I'll say those still a little skeptical.
Skeptical.
Scared for his future.
Yeah. So a lot of what you hear about today around climate change is very scary doom and gloom. The world is ending. It's causing a lot of anxiety. We're really trying to flip that and approach this with a really positive, solutions-focused approach that makes it not scary or adding to the anxiety for students, but make them actually believe that they can be Earth Warriors and their individual actions make a difference. So I will dive into that. What is Earth Warriors exactly? So we are a climate change and sustainability curriculum that uses this really positive solutions-focused approach to teach 3 to 11-year-olds about these really complex topics without causing any anxiety or adding to the doom and despair that already exists. And our vision is that the next generation inherits a healthier and greener planet. And again, these are all of our Earth Warriors students. And our mission is really to empower children to take climate action through age-appropriate climate education. And we were really excited this year to be recognized as a UNESCO Green Citizens Initiative and do a partnership with National Geographic, which I'll talk about in just a minute. But we really, really want to empower even the youngest students to be able to take climate action through age-appropriate climate education. And one of the things that I mentioned briefly, but I'll really touch on here, is we use a very positive and empowering approach to teach about climate change. So these are some of our characters. We have our 3 Earth Warriors, the Land, Sky, Water Earth Warrior, their sidekicks, Mother Earth, and so on. And it's not just that we feel this, research actually shows this. If you just teach the science of climate change, it can actually have a negative effect and lead to students feeling more anxious and more scared. What you have to do is actually couple this with a really positive, empowering civic engagement approach that incorporates social emotional learning, which will lead to climate action. Simply teaching the science doesn't work. And in fact, so far, we've been around for 2 school years so far. We started in 2020. 100% of the parents and teachers who have children participating in our program said that it didn't cause them any anxiety or stress, but rather they got excited about being an Earth Warrior and what their role could be at this really young age. And so what exactly do we offer? So we use this really fun and playful way to teach about these really important issues. And there's actually 3 pieces to it. One is, of course, the curriculum itself with our lesson plans, the student learning objectives, all of the resources teachers need. But second, and I feel really strongly about this as a former teacher, is our teacher training program, because you can't just give teachers a new curriculum without training them on how to use the curriculum and giving them the support. So we train teachers before they start and then give them year-round support while they're using the curriculum. And third, we're not just trying to be a curriculum, we're actually trying to build this global community of Earth Warrior students and teachers around the world, because it can feel really daunting if you feel like everything is put on you and your shoulders and your corner of the world, but it feels a lot more manageable if you're telling students there are Earth Warrior students and teachers around the world who are working on this together. So we have a lot of virtual and hopefully this year in-person events that students and teachers can collaborate and work together. And I'll go through some of them as we go through the presentation. And just to tell you a little bit about our curriculum. So it looks a bit different for the youngest age group because they have a shorter attention span. But for the majority of the age groups, there are 4 modules this year. The first one is around We Are Earth Warriors, which is building all of those feelings, mindsets, and behavior around protecting the planet and love for nature. The second one is What Is Climate Change, where they dive into the science behind climate change, but in a very what can we do and positive way. The third is Waste, and the fourth is the Community Project and Advocacy, which I'll dive into a little bit later. But just to say, all of the age groups have these same 4 modules, but they look different depending on what grade level it is, what year group it is, and what content they're actually learning. And I honestly think the biggest advocates for the program are the students themselves. So it's a global curriculum. It's currently being implemented in the US, the UK, India, Botswana, and Zambia. But I just wanted to play a 1-minute video so you could hear from the students. And you'll have to let me know if you can actually hear it. Hopefully this will work.
Everybody should be an Earth Warrior. We have to look after the animals and the plants.
I really want to help it and save it. Become a better place instead of becoming a wasteland.
Because the rainforest is getting shut down. It uses greenhouse gases. Make the earth be warmer.
Earth Warriors makes you learn, and this is fun at the same time.
I've been putting the right rubbish in the recycling.
The climate is changing. We must take action. Be an Earth Warrior.
So absolutely love watching that video, but that's some of our Earth Warriors from our schools in the UK, kind of just a compilation of what they've done. And I saw someone in the chat said, I can absolutely share the video after, because I really love hearing kind of how positive they feel about it. And they really believe that they can be Earth Warriors and that their actions are going to make a difference. Okay, so to dive into the meat of it, we call this our Earth Warriors approach, but actually it can be applied to anyone who wants to teach climate education. It's not specific to our curriculum or our lessons. It's just what we found is the most useful way to teach climate education in general. So just to start, I wanted to pause for a second, because, you know, there's a lot of jargon around climate change education. People kind of love throwing around the terms like climate justice, climate resilience, into a lot of different pieces, because it's a very hot topic right now. So I thought I would kind of take a moment to decode a little bit of this, or how we use it. So climate justice, you know, we are really trying to build this mindset for students that Earth is home to everyone, no matter where you live, no matter what you look like, we all share this planet together. And so ensuring that all groups of people have clean air, food and water, no matter their socioeconomic background, and finding solutions together to reduce emissions and create an equal world. And then building climate resilience is one that we talk about a lot, especially for our students in countries like India, Botswana, Zambia, because they're really feeling the effects of extreme weather events and things right now, is to give students the tools to prepare them for extreme weather and climate change related events, and giving them coping mechanisms and preparing them in a positive and empowering way. Because obviously we don't control extreme weather events right now. So giving students kind of tools and preparing and making sure that they know what to do before, when, and after they happen. And then climate advocacy is to advocate on local and national levels to support climate education initiatives. And then nurturing connections to nature is them building connections with their local communities to maintain and protect the land that they're on. And some of our core values that we have running through all of our lessons, diversity, equity, inclusion, differentiation. Our lessons are used in a variety of schools with lots of different students, with lots of different learning needs, and lots of different levels of teachers as well, from new teachers in their first year to very experienced teachers. So we've made sure that it's easy to differentiate our lessons for lots of different learning environments. The positive approach that I have gone on and on about, and incorporating climate justice as well, as we just discussed, into our lessons. And so these are just some of our tips to teaching really high quality climate education for teachers specifically. So one is that making it really authentic. I think any of us who've been teachers and been told you have to do this or you have to do something, your teachers know you really well. They know what you're passionate about. So if you pick a topic you're really excited about and then authentically show that and share that with your students, they will pick up on it as well. And then the second piece, which we really dive into in our fourth module I'll get into, is giving kids real world experiences and hands-on experiences so they can see right away they're making a difference locally. And even one way we do that is building relationships with businesses and community members and seeing what they're doing in terms of their sustainable practices. And one other piece is, yes, we've developed this climate change and sustainability curriculum, but it's actually reinforcing all of these other core subjects around literacy, numeracy, social emotional learning, science, geography. So making it integrate into other parts of the day. So it's not just, oh, this is our climate change and sustainability time of the day. It's actually something that's just being integrated into daily life, and students have a positive association with it. These are our top five tips in our approach to teaching climate change, and I'll dive into each one of them with an example shortly. But the first one is be positive and conquer your fears. As I mentioned, none of us learned about this growing up. We're all trying to catch up on it. There's a lot of anxiety among ourselves and adults as well. The second is make students feel empowered to take individual action. And especially with this young age, individual action is what's appropriate. And then they build up to take systems level action. This third point is absolutely key. Yes, climate change is a global issue, but every country has different problems and therefore needs different solutions around what they're facing to do with climate change. So it has to be local and relevant for students. Four is practice what you preach in the classroom. Any ways you can embed sort of small sustainability tips goes a long way. And the fifth one is to have open, positive conversations. You know, we've seen this tendency to kind of shield young kids from what's going on, but they know they are experiencing a lot of this themselves. So we've found that it's better to have open, positive conversations rather than just ignore it and try to pretend that nothing's happening. So to dive into each one, you know, be positive and conquer your fears. We always tell our teachers to research climate change or take a training with us or anyone so that they feel confident about the subject, and then really model and be solutions focused and know that you're learning along with your students. So it's not that you have all the knowledge and you're imparting it. It's not that any of you are going to become climate change experts in a day or a week or a month. You're all kind of learning together. And one of the ways that we do this, but I was just thinking, we might have time to play it, is we did a collaboration with National Geographic to use our characters to create this 3-minute animated video that we always share with teachers as kind of a way to explain climate change very simply to really young kids, but also add the positive, what can we do? Because if you see a lot of videos, animated videos for kids on YouTube or wherever, Nat Geo, WWF, explain a lot of the science, but are missing the second piece of, okay, then what can kids do? Because they learn these sort of complicated, scary topics and then are left with kind of now what? So I think I will play it. Let me know if you can hear this.
The sun keeps the earth warm so plants can grow and animals can be healthy and happy. A layer of gases surrounds the earth, stopping heat escaping. But if the layer of gases is too thick, the earth becomes too hot. Cold places aren't as cold as they should be, and warm places are too hot for anyone to live there. So where do these warming gases come from? Many of them come when we burn coal or oil from deep underground, made by trees and tiny sea animals who lived millions of years ago. This coal and oil contains a lot of carbon. And when we use it to make electricity or fuel for cars and planes, we're setting free the carbon that's been locked up for millions of years, creating gases that make Earth warmer. As temperatures rise, ice melts. The water that was locked up in the ice makes sea levels rise, causing floods. A warmer planet also causes changes in the weather, making storms and hurricanes more frequent, which is bad news for plants, humans, and other animals that live on the planet. But the good news is we all can help. There are Earth warriors all over the world working together to protect Mother Earth. So, how can we help? We can try to use less energy, walk or cycle instead of traveling by car. We can turn off lights when we don't need them. Try not to throw things away. Recycling them saves energy. Spread the word. Tell your friends and family why this is so important to all of us and how we can all make a change. Join us and become an Earth Warrior today.
So that's sort of one of the resources we've developed. We actually try to minimize screen time on our curriculum and get kids more out in nature or doing hands-on activities, but it is one of the few videos that we have in our curriculum. And it's available for anybody anywhere who wants to use it. And the second is make students feel empowered to take individual action. So see what causes your students are passionate about to inspire them, and then giving them confidence by collaborating with other students around the world. So one of the ways I was mentioning this global community that we're building, we did this last year, was through our Pen Pal program. And we actually connected our schools in the UK, the US, India, and Botswana. And for 4 weeks, all of the students did the same activity, but in completely different contexts. And then they wrote, drew, or recorded a video for each other. And in the last week, they actually got to get on a Zoom call with their partner classroom, which was really, really inspiring for them. So again, this sort of global connection and seeing what sustainability issues look like in different countries has been really inspiring for the students. And there was just a less than 1 minute video about the program I wanted to show you. That is actually our theme song, which is why it's in so many of the videos. So three, and this one, as I mentioned, is really key. Make it local and contextual for students. Have options for students to get involved locally, and also options for parents and the school community to get involved as well. And one of the ways that we do this is through the fourth module, which we call our community project and advocacy module. So students and teachers pick a sustainability issue in their classroom, school, or community, and then they follow our project-based framework to come up with a solution for it and actually implement the solution. Because we want students to see they can identify a problem in their community, come up with a solution, and actually do something about it. So we have a framework that students and teachers follow, and we suggest a minimum of 2 weeks, but honestly, some schools have done months-long projects. It can be something as small as one of our schools realized that a lot of the toys in their early childhood classrooms were made of plastic, so they had parents and students bringing recycled materials. They made all of these actually really incredible toys out of recycled materials. And from then on, that's what they used as the toys for their dramatic play area or their free play time in all of the classrooms in the schools. All the way to some of our schools have made eco committees involving parents and local community members, school gardens, a complete ban of single-use plastic. They've done sort of reusable lunch boxes, water bottles. So there's been a range of things, and what kids come up with is so creative and so exciting. And they're excited to see that they come up with a solution that's actually then implemented in their own community. And practice what you preach, sustainability in the classroom. So, you know, as teachers, educators, students watch you all the time. Everything you do, they are observing. And the easiest way is just to model climate positive and sustainable habits yourself. Whatever small way teachers and schools can do this, or HGSE, whoever, kind of embedding these as small daily habits make it seem really normal for students and young children. And one of the ways we do this is using completely DIY materials or materials found in nature. So for example, these were binoculars made out of toilet paper rolls used for our nature hunts that the students go on with string. And these are our nature paintbrushes, because a lot of paintbrushes are plastic that schools and communities use. And so they use sticks, whatever leaves were found in their local community, and string, and then painted with them. And finally, having open conversations. So talking to your students about climate change openly, seeing what they already know, what their fears and worries might be, and not just the students, but maybe the parents as well, other teachers. And then one of the ways we found to start this conversation in a positive way is exposing students to real life climate change activists. So there are young kids all over the world who are doing really incredible things in their local community, even as young as 6 or 7 years old. This is just an example of a girl named Freya, who started her nonprofit for endangered animals when she was 8. But I think showing kids, other kids who are their age or close to their age, and what they've done is a really positive and inspiring way to start the conversation, rather than starting it with something kind of scary or negative. And, you know, how can teachers apply these 5 tips in a classroom right away? Let's say they don't have our curriculum, they don't have our lesson plans. What can they actually start tomorrow to introduce climate education in a very easy way that doesn't require hours of prep? So the first one is just starting with a bite-sized goal, you know, deciding what do teachers want to achieve in 1 month, maybe finding one story of a climate change activist in their city or country and sharing that with their students during story time or circle time, or for older students during English or literacy, whenever it may be. You don't have to start with a full comprehensive curriculum or, you know, lesson plans upon lesson plans that you've done to learning standards. You can literally just start with one inspiring story and see how that goes for students. You can also empower students, especially our older students in kind of the 8 to 11 age group, to find causes that they feel really passionate about already, and help them, and having options ready ahead of time really takes the pressure off for teachers. And then making it contextual, you know, whatever is near your school, even if it's your local shop or your local laundromat or wherever it may be, or finding community members to speak to students, and doing this and getting them involved even before the school year begins. And then, as I mentioned, sustainability in the classroom, anything you can do, even having a conversation about, a lot of classrooms just sort of have recycling bins that are just there and they tell students what to do, but don't really talk about why students have recycling bins or why you might have a school garden. So any really simple things you can do to just start the conversation. And then again, being really open and honest with your students around current events. If you are experiencing extreme weather, having a conversation about it, understanding their feelings and validating them will give them a real confidence that you're there to support them as well. And lastly, you've heard a lot from me, so I will give you some time for questions. But if any of you are interested to learn more about Earth Warriors or want to get involved, you know, our goal is really climate action through climate education. And we wanted to create a curriculum that teachers feel at ease using and students really look forward to the Earth Warriors part of their day. And please do join our community. This is my email. You can get in touch with me at any point, kea@earthwarriorsglobal.com. And if you know any schools that are interested in introducing climate education but not sure how to, please let us know, because we would really love to support them. So thank you. I talked a lot. Do you guys have any questions for me?
Okay, do you mind just going back to your email real quick?
Oh, of course.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for spending the time with us to share the whole curriculum and all the tips, the jargon, everything. I feel like it's been really useful. If you have time for maybe 10 minutes of questions, could we stay together for that amount of time? Absolutely. That works? Okay. So if anybody has any questions, suggestions, even classroom experience of your own that you want to share and have discuss with Kay and the rest of us, that would be great. Yeah. You want to start with the conference?
Yeah. Thank you for the wonderful talk. It was really insightful about how to, you know, the whole time of talking about sustainability with children in a non-anxiety inducing way. I have two questions for you. One of them is around climate resilience. I'm curious what how you teach climate resilience to kids, given that we know the climate's already changing. What are good ways to work with kids on how we can prepare for a climate resilient future? And then my other question is, I'm curious how you help students extend their learnings beyond the classroom into the home. I know you talked a little bit about habits and mindsets, and I've also heard that kids are the best people to convince their parents to take action on climate change. So I'm curious how you work with parents and kids to continue to take action outside of your curriculum and in the home.
Oh, yes. Maybe I'll start with the second one, because that's absolutely true. And actually, the research shows that children at this age nudge parents' behavior, not just on climate action, but on everything. And one of the big side effects we found that wasn't a primary focus for us, but now is becoming one, is actually kids are going home and talking to their parents about earth warriors and nudging them on habits and things that they do at home. And we've had so many emails from parents and conversations from parents through teachers about how they're actually changing their behavior at home because of what their students are coming home and telling them to do. So there's a couple of ways that we do this. I mean, one, I think it's happening organically, as you mentioned, and I mentioned they're just nudging behaviors and we're hearing those stories anecdotally, but more purposefully, I think the community module that I mentioned, where they pick a problem in their community, we actually encourage them to get parents involved and have in the framework that we give, there's a whole protocol around how they have to showcase the project to the community, invite parents, invite the local community to get involved so that it's not just contained within the school, but actually parents and the local community can see what's going on and what they've done. And then the third piece is, some of our lessons, we have different icons to show teachers different pieces, but a lot of them have sort of an at-home extension that teachers can send home to do with parents and kids. And what we've actually found is a lot of schools have ended up setting up eco committees, which they didn't have before, which we encourage a mix of parents, teachers, and local community members to sit on. So in our first year, it was actually more of a side effect of what happened with students just going home and talking to their parents. But this year, we've actually been a bit more purposeful with our at-home extension activities, with the community module, and where we've toyed with the idea of a parent program as well, because a lot of parents have reached out to us too. So I think it's something that we're definitely thinking about, is what can parents do at home? And actually, interestingly, when we first started 2 years ago, we actually started with a 5-week parent program because schools were shut everywhere, right? So that was actually really popular while schools were in lockdown. A lot of parents participated, but I think as things opened up and people got back into normal life, going back into the office, schools opened, the uptake on the parent program sort of dipped a little bit, which is why we focused on the school program. But I think the parent piece of it is something that we're definitely thinking through again. Sorry, and you had a second question. Climate resilience. Yes. So this one is tricky in the sense that every country, every city is facing different natural disasters, right? Which require different levels of preparedness, different solutions, and sort of different aftermath. The piece that we focus on in the curriculum and sort of build up is, one, the social emotional side. So how can actually students deal with the emotions, deal with the anxiety, deal with sort of the fear and scaredness that comes with these extreme weather events. And then two is, we actually do have lessons on kind of preparing for extreme weather events. But again, it's a bit more of a framework, and the teachers have to do a bit more of the heavy lifting on researching what exactly they can do for their specific extreme weather event, if that makes sense. Because what you would do for a hurricane, for example, is very different for what you would do to floods. So we do have lessons around like building resiliency in general on the emotional piece, and also actually what you can do for your extreme weather event, but they're very customized by teachers, if that makes sense, because it just looks really different everywhere. It would be difficult for us to create the exact plans of how to prepare and what to do after the disasters for hundreds of cities, if that makes sense.
Thank you so much.
I'm curious to hear, like, whether you can give a quick overview from, because I looked on your website and you separated, like, the curriculum into, like, 3 to 5 year olds, 5 to 7 year olds, and 8 to 11 year olds. So I'm curious to hear, like, a rough overview of, like, how the methodologies for different age groups are different. And the second question is, like, are these curriculums available for free, or, like, how do you get access?
Absolutely. So actually on our website, just the pilot lessons we've had, we've made more like generic ones for those 3 age groups, but we actually have 8 age groups in our full curriculum. So we have one for each grade level, starting 3 to 4, 4 to 5, 5 to 6, 6 to 7, and so on up to 10 to 11. Just the pilot lessons that are available on our website are clumped together, but the actual curriculum is 8 separate age groups because the learning standards are different for every single age group. So actually all of the lessons are tied to the learning standards for that specific age group. So for example, what 3 to 4 year olds are learning and the length of their lessons and the structure of their lessons looks completely different from what the 10 to 11 year olds are using. For the younger students, they actually have 8 modules, not the 4 that I showed you in the presentation, that are more bite-sized, that are 5 lessons each. The structure is completely different because it aligns with what a lot of nurseries and preschools do. So it incorporates into circle time, it incorporates into center stations, and then again, circle time at the end, versus with the older age groups, it's focused a lot more on kind of teamwork, leadership skills, building advocacy skills. And in our curriculum, we actually have all of these scope and sequence documents, which show how the learning builds across the 8 age groups, not just on the climate change and sustainability skills, but on all of the other skills that it's reinforcing as well. So we have a full sort of scope and sequence that shows teachers the progression of skills they're learning, one from a feelings, mindset, and behavior perspective, 2 from a climate change foundational science perspective, and 3 from what are the other foundational skills and learning standards it's reinforcing not to do with climate change and sustainability. So there is, like, it's very thought out and linked to learning standards for each of the 8 age groups. And then to answer your second question, we actually have 2 different strands of Earth Warriors. So one is that we sell the curriculum to schools that are able to afford to buy it. That's one piece. And the second piece is, because our mission is to get it to every school student or teacher who wants it, we actually partner with foundations and corporations through CSR funding to give it to schools for free. So that's currently how our schools in Botswana, Zambia, all of our local council schools here in London are getting the curriculum for free because they're being sponsored by foundations and corporations. So there's 2 separate pieces.
Thank you.
And I think, Jenny, you've had a hand.
Yeah, I was just going to say we'll go to Jenny next. Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, this is so informative and really inspiring. I'm an alum of the MBE program, the EPM program at Harvard. So it's nice to see Gutman and all the faces here. I have a couple questions. One is about, like, older kids, why you stop at 8 to 11, and if you have a plan for expanding to older students. And then my other question is about the 4th module, about partnering with organizations. And for a little context, I'm in Boston and working in at Eastie Farm, which is a farm and a food and climate justice grassroots organization. And we actually teach in BPS, but are trying to develop a more standardized curriculum and are definitely interested in working with you. But what we do is we have a geothermal greenhouse and we do a lot of climate mitigation, resilience, and adaptation work. And for the older kids that we work with, hands-on growing food, getting food to people, giving tours of our geothermal greenhouse, all of these, like, hands-on components of the work are what I have seen give, especially the high schoolers, the real hope. And I am curious, for older students and for your younger ones, what the, like, partnership with local organizations looks like.
Yeah, so the age group, Preston, is a great one. We actually started with just 3 to 7 year olds because that was my background and expertise. And we found that there was a huge gap for early childhood. So for example, like the Stanford School of Earth has done a full curriculum for middle and high school, or we found more resources were available for middle and high schoolers, but there was nothing for early childhood. So we actually originally thought we'd only do 3 to 7. And then in our first year, we went to visit schools, and the 7-year-olds, who are the year two here in London, said, "Oh, and what about next year? What are we going to do for Earth Warriors next year?" And then we realized we couldn't just give it up to grade two and then cut them off. And it made sense if we were going to start primary or elementary school to actually see it through all the way. So that's why we added the 8 to 11-year-old age group. So we go up to the end of primary/elementary school. We are only in our second year, so we've had thoughts both ways about continuing to go up and go all the way to 18. But as I mentioned, there is a lot out there that exists. We haven't ruled it out yet, but it's sort of a question with all startups is, do you, you know, stay in your age group and go deeper and build out more modules and more content, or do you continue to grow up? So it's not something that we've ruled out, but it's something that we're thinking about at the moment. And then the second piece, maybe, I think if you got my email, please do email me, because I would love to go into detail. And we have no two of our partnerships look the same. So it's very different depending on the partner and what they do and what the context is. So I can definitely chat more with you about that.
Thank you.
All right, we've got a few more questions here. Let's go to this table next.
Do you and your co-founder do all of the site visits? How does it work with checking in on schools, doing teacher training? Are you sort of keeping tabs in more of a remote basis? And what is that kind of looking like post-pandemic-ish?
Yeah, so when we started, it was completely virtual. And our curriculum is actually accessed all through our online teacher portal. We don't send any physical materials to schools, no plastic manipulatives, nothing. So all of our lessons are done, as I mentioned, using DIY materials or materials found in nature. And we try to encourage teachers not to print it as well, but some do, which is totally fine. So there's a number of different ways. Depending on the country and where it is, we will try to meet the schools in person. I'm based in the UK. My co-founder is based in India. We recently did this trip to Botswana and Zambia to visit the schools there because it was a large number of schools that we're doing this customization project for. But I think as much as we can, we'll try to do at least the first teacher training in person to build those relationships, meet the schools, meet the teachers, and then the rest of the year-round support is online. And we have specific check-in points every month, and there's a WhatsApp group teachers are on if they choose to be, because there's a fine balance between gathering the impact data that you need and then just bombarding schools and teachers. So we have an incredible curriculum manager who manages the support for all of the schools that way. So yes, we have, you know, impact measures that we take at the beginning and end of the school year. We check in with teachers once a month, and we provide year-round support when they need it. But it's a bit of a balance between how much to check in versus how much to not bombard them.
All right. And I think we still have at least two more questions. If you've got time, Kaya, we've got 3-4 minutes more. Is that okay for you? Okay, great. So we'll go to Ola. Do you have a question?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi, Kaya. It's so great. Hear from me. My name's Ola. First of all, I want to say it's amazing you're doing this work. I absolutely agree it's a gap in early education that I'm happy to see you're kind of filling and addressing. And absolutely agree that action orientation is kind of necessary, not the science isn't enough. But I'm going to ask, I hope you'll forgive me, a challenging question that I've been thinking about, and I just want to hear if you've thought about it too. When I've reflected on my own experience as a child with environmental education, I feel that I have a sense of disillusionment that I was sold that individual action could solve this, when really we need like a rapid transition to clean energy at a systemic level. And you kind of said that it's not age appropriate, which I agree with, but I wonder if you've thought of, like, I know you've only been doing this for 2 years. I wonder if you've thought about that kind of long-term buildup to the systemic solutions that we need.
Yes, absolutely. And it's something that we discuss a lot because, yes, as you said, it's not age appropriate to talk about it, especially with, like, you know, the 3 to 5 year olds, but actually with our older students, so sort of like the 9, 10, and 11 year olds, we do actually talk a lot about kind of systems level change, what needs to happen, governments, corporations, what that looks like, but in a sort of age appropriate way, because I do agree you can't just continue on year after year saying individual action is what's going to make the difference. But I think because this is the first year we've had the 8 to 11 curriculum, we've actually introduced it in the oldest two age groups, and talking as well about going into sort of green jobs and what those careers look like and what are the different pieces that will make a difference. But we're hoping that, and it's a long-term goal, right, that going through the Earth Warriors curriculum will then actually set up the students when they get into middle and high school to engage more and to sort of advocate for the systems level change that's needed. So I think this was the version one of the 8 to 11 curriculum. We're already talking about what we would add for next year, but I think that's definitely a piece that we do need to start embedding more, especially with the older students. I just don't think it's possible for the very youngest students just because of where they are developmentally. But I think now that we've moved into this older age group, it's something we do need to incorporate more of.
Great, thank you.
Okay, we're pretty much at time now. So just in case any of you have to rush the class, I just want to say thank you so much for joining. But we do have 3 more questions if you have time to take them, Kaya, completely up to you. If not,
no, absolutely.
So we'll get to those questions, but for those of you who may have to go, thank you so much for taking time out. And I have to thank you so much, Kaya, for making the time to speak with all of us. And I just feel like there's a lot of excitement around this topic, and it's so helpful to hear from you with your experience around it. So hopefully it's the beginning of a conversation and not the end. But in the meantime, let me go to one question we had in the chat, which was from Savvy, saying, if I was to get the pronunciation right, says, what percentage of the schools you work with are private versus public? And then we also have a question from Shag.
Right. Yeah, so actually this school year, about 60% of the schools we're working with are the public schools that are getting sponsorship from either a foundation or a corporation, and about 40% are paying for the curriculum because they're high fee schools who can afford to pay for it.
And then we'll take your question from Zoom here. Sorry to keep you waiting.
Hi, is that for me? Okay.
Yep.
Hi, yeah, I'm Hagit, and thank you for the presentation. It's super interesting. And I'm a parent, I'm not a teacher, but I'm in the green team for my kids' elementary school. And actually right now trying to get composting started actually in our school. Restart actually, it was launched before COVID and then stopped, and then now it's hopefully going to get back on board soon. My question was, in terms of curriculum with public schools, this is in the US, in Massachusetts, yep. I mean, to put in something in the curriculum, my understanding is like the superintendent has to like come in and like, it's like a whole, you know, you can't just go into like one school. It's, you know, there's a you know, 15 public elementary schools in just my town. So have you worked with, like on that level, have you worked with a, you know, like
yep.
in terms of curriculum? Okay.
Yeah. So
trying to figure out if I was going to try to insert this somewhere, if I could, you know, how that works. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a couple of different pieces to it actually. And we were just talking about this the other day. So for example, when I taught in a public school in Oakland, there was a science curriculum that was used in all of the public schools, and there was sort of a dedicated time for it. But teachers, one individually or as a school, could choose to kind of purchase something extra. There was always like an hour on Friday that you could do something different. So one, it could be like a teacher or school level choice to use it during that hour. Two, actually what we found has been really successful here in London, and we're actually in talks with a few of the districts in New Jersey, but that's slightly different because New Jersey public schools just got a budget actually for climate education this year. The First Lady in New Jersey is really passionate about it, which is great. But we found that going at a district by district or here local authority by local authority level, actually, if you get, for example, here, like the Westminster City Council to buy into it, you can get it in those schools. versus trying to go all the way to the city level or the state level. Like you said, it's really difficult to get anything done at sort of the top level. So we're trying to work from the bottom level up. So we found that going to specific districts and creating those partnerships with who might have a leader who's interested is one way. But the second piece, which we've actually found a lot of success with, is we also offer Earth Warriors as an after-school club. So a lot of schools are using it as kind of their eco club, or once a week they might have like a gardening club or an outdoor school club. And that, again, obviously the preference would be for it to be during the school day in the curriculum. But if that's really impossible, about a third of our schools are doing it as an after-school club and implementing it that way. And that seemed to be actually a good way to get it into schools. So it's a bit flexible and there are ways to do it. It just depends on kind of the appetite of that specific public school district or the school or teachers in general.
Got it. Okay, great. Thank you.
And I'm happy if you email me, I'm happy to chat with you more.
Great.
Great. And I think we had one more question, if I'm not too late. Still have your question or no?
I think I'll think about it.
I'll think about it. Yeah. Okay, not to put you on the spot. All
right. No, no, it's all
right. Well, I think just one last call. Anybody in the room have any other questions for Kaya? Where we sign off.
I do have one question. So you mentioned about you also have teacher training program.
Yes.
Is that a separate thing or it's like it's part of the school partnership collaboration?
Yeah, really good question. So it's both. If you purchase a subscription to the curriculum or it's sponsored for you, teacher training is included in that subscription. So it's the curriculum materials, teacher training and year-round support, and access to the global community. All three pieces are in that curriculum subscription. However, separately from that, we offer two different kinds of teacher training. One is for pre-service teachers who are not yet teachers. And actually, we've partnered with the state of New Jersey and two universities here to give teacher training on climate education in general, not specific to Earth Warriors, to pre-service teachers who are about to become teachers. And the second is we do have customized teacher training that schools can sign up for, which is customized to that school, school network, school district. Again, on climate education in general for young children, not specific to our lessons or our curriculum. So there's two different pieces to it.
Okay, I see. So a follow-up question, how do we sign up for that? Or, you know, if I'm interested or, schools are interested.
Yes. So very excitingly, in the next 2 weeks, we are launching a new website. So please ignore our website right now. It is very out of date. And on that website, it's going to have all of the information on how to sign up for the teacher training. But if you email me, I will remember to send it to you when it launches. Because yes, 2 weeks.
I'm happy to share out. If there are any resources that you've covered today that you're comfortable with sharing, I'm happy to send them out to any of the attendees that were here virtually or in person. So yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm going to turn off the recording now and just thank you again, Kaya, so much. Thank you all for attending. But feel free to mingle and cook yourselves some more food. And just thank you so much again for making time for this.
Thanks so much.